Dear Black girl, you'll come to this private institution with stars in your eyes. You'll be fooled, used, and abused, so long as you can stand it. And when you finally speak out, you'll be disappointed.
This is Mouthful, and I'm Yvonne Laddie. Every week, I will be having a complicated conversation with a young person about the things that matter to them, things they have written about and shared on stages across the city. And then we will go out into the community and talk to teens, adults, experts, anyone who can broaden the conversation. Today's episode is about double standards. Specifically, it's about the expectations for students of color in private schools. Be high achieving, be bright, be cheerful, be ready at a moment's notice to represent diversity. But don't misbehave, don't make any waves, and don't call anyone out. As a woman of color, it's something I've dealt with my entire life. As a mother of two daughters, it's something I see my kids going through today. In some ways, it's a nice spot to be in. You're given fantastic opportunities to succeed and to advance your life and your career. But on the other hand, sometimes you sort of feel like a prop. When Angela Bay was a student at a private high school, she wrote a monologue that was produced by Philly Young Playwrights about this very thing, the experience of being held up on a pedestal. Today we're digging into that monologue and why it continues to resonate with older folks like me and younger people alike. Here's Pedestals by Angela Bay.
Good afternoon, Principal Miller. Long time no see. This isn't about grades, I promise. You don't have to worry about the scholarship. I don't want to worry anyone. But I have to say something about the horrible treatment that I've received as of late. Not from you. From the kids, Miss Miller. Not you at all. They turned out really well. The pamphlets. I'm flattered that I'm on the cover, but geez, you weren't kidding when you said HD. Yes, I know I'm here. I just don't know why John isn't. With all due respect, I don't know why I'm here. I didn't do anything wrong. So I punched him in the face. That wasn't wrong, per se. The ends justified the means. He... Big trouble? I'm in big trouble? Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I know that you weren't there, but it can't be hard for you to imagine the severity of what he said and how it affected me. How it would affect you, too. Surely you've been in a similar situation. I'm not suggesting that you're a violent person. I mean the emotional. I mean... Never mind. I understand that I have to be punished. I'm a good student. My face on the cover of the pamphlet proves it. It's my first offense, while John, on the other hand... I know that you're upset with me. I'm sorry, it's not like me. I'm just angry. Not at you. It's just... Maybe it's best that he's not here right now. I can speak plainly, and once this is settled, everyone will be better off. You're the only person in the faculty that I can talk to about this. I know how you don't like to be sentimental, and I understand that it's way unprofessional to say this, but I have to. It's nice to see someone that looks like me walking around here. It makes this place feel a little less like a different planet, in a different galaxy, in a different dimension. I'm a girl of two worlds, but I'm alien to both. Who am I kidding? No, I'm not trying to distract you. It's the truth. I'm sorry, you want the truth? It was last period English, and we had gotten back our last exam for the quarter. I wasn't worried. English is my best subject, but the day we took the test, I was having some trouble at home, and I work, and the show at school. I blinked. I failed. You know what John Blowski said? He looked over my shoulder as everyone was leaving the classroom and said, "We all expected that." So I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, well, everyone knows that you people can't read or write. What do you think he meant by you people? It wasn't a partner assignment. I was the only one in the room that didn't find it funny, so I punched him square in his funny-looking face. This wasn't the first time. He's been doing things like this since freshman year. Even the way that he speaks to me is different. Yo, you gon' chill with us or what? You cool? No, I'm not cool. And the teachers say that I'm overreacting? Is my skin so dark that they can't see past the stereotypes? I let it go on for so long. They mocked me. I laughed with them, even started believing it. Sorry to vent like this, Miss Miller. I don't have anyone. But I'm out of line? I thought you'd at least hear my side of the story. I wouldn't lie to you. I am listening. Why do you keep making excuses for a racist? Yes, a racist. He goes against everything that brochure stands for. Diversity, equality for all, respect. He doesn't respect me, Miss Miller. Why is he allowed to stay when all he's been doing is terrorizing the student body? Who cares if his dad is the president of the school board? He's a racist. I'm expelled? Why? You can't expel me. Why would you expel the girl who's done nothing but good for you and for the school? That girl that's on the cover of... What will my parents think? But Miss Miller, I looked up to you. You can't... I don't... Just listen! Shut up, fine, no. You're not my principal anymore. You decided that. Where are you going? You're just gonna leave me here to what? To think? Think about what? You can't... Look at that stupid smile. You're not who I thought you were. You're not who I am. You've been lied to, colored with hopes and dreams, and printed out for prospective students to see. Who cares if any of that's the truth? You are the token black girl who everyone will call the angry black girl, even if all you are trying to be is a human being. You've detached yourself from me, put yourself on some black pedestal. They cheered with you so long as you looked pretty for the camera. They asked you to straighten your hair. They expected you to work twice as hard to measure up to the other kids. They slammed the door in your face when you didn't. Dear black girl, you'll come to this private institution with stars in your eyes. You'll be fooled, used, and abused, so long as you can stand it. And when you finally speak out, you'll be disappointed.
The ending is dark.
That's Angela.
But I think what adds insult to injury for her in the piece is that she's a black woman, and the principal is also a black woman, and she's explaining why, you know, she punched this kid John in the face, and it's because John called her the N-word. John's been racist to her since elementary school. Yeah, the ending is dark, and she gets expelled, and Principal Miller leaves the room, and she's left with this pamphlet in her hand that she's on the cover of. She uses it throughout the piece as like, look, I'm on the cover, like, these turned out really well, like, look at me, I'm a good student. I sat there and I did a photo shoot for several hours, and this is not the first time that stuff like this has happened, and here's an example of it. I'm holding it in my hand. So at the end of the monologue, Principal Miller leaves. She's left with this picture of this girl that she doesn't even recognize anymore, because she's realizing, she makes a connection that, you know, this the girl on the cover of that pamphlet, yes, looks like her, has a smile, you know, is a star student, all of those things, but you don't get anything else. You only get her face. You only get her representation, you get her face on the cover of that. You get her brown face on the cover of that diversity pamphlet, and she's expelled now. So she's not even a student at that school anymore. But they're still going to hand those out to students.
Even though Angela is at her Sinus College now, the experience that inspired the monologue, appearing in so many brochures, continues to be a constant in her life.
I just finished a photo shoot for her Sinus for the same sort of thing.
As for hitting someone, Angela never did that.
I've had the impulse. I've gotten angry, and it's okay to be angry.
As is the case with so many kids in this position, Angela began to feel her identity was splintered, caught between her struggling neighborhood in Southwest Philly and her private school.
I think for me, what I'm coming to terms with is that you can't choose either or. It's like it's all me, and as hard as it is to reconcile that, like that is what it is. I have my diploma from Friend Select, and I have my area code from Southwest Philadelphia. Like, that's not going to change. And I have photos to prove both of those. And so it's like when you put me, look at yourself side by side in a picture album, and this is like pedestals, and you don't recognize either of the people. And then I look at my pictures of myself today, and I go, that's a complicated, messy person. And like what I was saying before, like, people are going to look at that picture of me smiling with my afro, because now I have afro and I don't straighten my hair anymore. And they'll go, wow, that's a really empowered Black woman. And I am, but I'm working through a lot, and they don't see my area code, and they don't see my diploma. They just see that.
I couldn't let go of Angela's monologue or our conversation. My own daughter, Nola, who, like any good teenager, normally could not care less about what I'm doing, actually perked up when I told her about this monologue. She had heard it before, and it made her think about her own experiences growing up. We had never talked about this before. I decided to take her to Philly Young Playwrights' office to meet up with Lisa Nelson Haynes, the executive director, and her daughter, Olivia, who was the same age as Nola. All of us share the experience of having felt like we were on display at majority white schools. Angela's monologue started a conversation about her own experiences. Olivia said she wasn't surprised to find out that Angela went to private school like she does.
Now, I wasn't surprised by it, being a Black girl at a independent school. I could totally imagine that happening, and one of us or a Black girl or a Black boy getting in trouble for it. And I think at primarily white prep schools, my mom has said this, and I noticed this and when I'm looking at pictures of me and some of my white friends, or just me and my friends in a picture with our grade, that we automatically stick out to people. If we do something wrong, you know it's us 100%. Like, there's no, oh, it was this girl and she had brown hair and brown eyes. Like, it's like, no, this Black girl did this. She has locks. You can tell, you're easily recognizable for anyone. So it's like the minute you do something, they know it's you.
Do you guys feel like you are put on pedestals?
There's this idea that, like, if you're a person of color, like, you kind of always have to, like, be in the front and be, like, their presentation to, like, try and make the school look more diverse than it really is. But then, like, the second you, like, step out of line, there's immediately, like, less patience for you. I, like, have seen that as a problem.
That's my daughter, Nola. Coincidentally, she goes to the same school Angela went to. Not only has she felt the same pressure to be on the pamphlets, she also related a common experience, getting mixed up with another girl who has the same skin tone that she does.
There's lots of, like, little microaggressions that come with that. Like, I've gotten, like, mixed up with people that, like, look nothing like me except for the fact that we're both, like, light-skinned Black girls. And like, people in, like, different grades, people I haven't even talked to. Like, it's happened to me multiple times. I'm always like, okay, like, that's not, where did that come from?
But both Noel and Olivia agree that there's no way to become a diverse school unless you show diversity.
Like, yeah, I think so. But I think it's, like, almost, not like a necessary evil, but, like, I can't think of another way for, like, schools to try and recruit more diversity. So I'm not really sure how it can be fixed.
Yes, definitely. I think people like to show their people of color, like, their POC students off. I know that when, as a, I'm a senior, looking at colleges, I'm looking constantly for other people of color, and I'm looking, well, are they together? Are they talking to each other? Are they interacting with each other?
I wanted to find out if the girls ever felt that temptation that Angela felt, to hit someone for saying something racist and ultimately deeply painful.
So in Angela's piece, just getting back to it quickly, she actually hits a kid at an independent, like in a prep school. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you could ever see happening or with your friends? Or have you ever felt like so frustrated that you would want to?
I haven't punched a kid, but I remember sophomore year and I wrote this as a college.
Olivia came close.
He said something ignorant. I think it was about Mike Brown, but he was like, that kid, he should have been shot. He deserved to be shot. And I heard this and I ran in front of him in the middle of the cafeteria and I was like, what did you say? That's going off on him and yelling at him in the middle of the cafeteria. And he was just stunned and didn't say much.
Over the past year, I've thought about how hard things have been for my kids and other Black children. Since the murder of Trayvon Martin 5 years ago, it seems like nonstop cases of Black people being murdered for ridiculous reasons. And then you, the Black parent, find yourself having to explain something you don't understand to your kids over and over again and warn them, be safe, don't talk back, look straight ahead, don't engage. And you see that look in their eyes change over the years from what? To fear, to resignation, that this is their new normal. And it breaks your heart. It's hard for them to talk about it. It stresses them out. It hurts them. It angers them. It's too much pressure with everything else a teen has to deal with. Expectations are high all the time, in school, at home, and even with friends.
And after that, I went home and I was like, oh, no, like, what did I do? And saying like, oh, like he didn't respond to me. Like I didn't get the response that I wanted. I didn't get a reason. And after thinking about it, I like sat down. It was right before winter break. And I wrote this long email just saying, like going through. I was like, sorry I confronted you. And like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I came at you too strong. But I really want to know why you're thinking this way and breaking it down that way. And he responded, and he was totally respectful. He gave me his opinion. It was just as long as my email. And from that experience, I realized, oh, he didn't have to do that, and he chose to do that. And I really appreciate him for making that choice and taking the time to talk to me about that, because I didn't handle it right the first way. It's having that opportunity to kind of like simmer down and think about it and talk to my mom and my friends about what had happened really helped me kind of find my zen.
Nola said Black kids feel a universal anger and sadness.
The second I'm like able to like not like let it go, but like kind of like done being mad about it, then like something else happens, then I'm mad again. Like it's like kind of this like nonstop like little emotional roller coaster that is like the past, what, like 4 years, but like forever. And like my friends are all mad. There's like this like universal, like blank Black like, anger like, right now. Yeah.
As we were about to leave the room, Lisa shared that she did hit a classmate once over 30 years ago. She was the only Black student in her suburban high school.
I was the only Black and I was on the school bus. I would have drive ride the school bus, you know, with the same kids every day. And there was a boy on the bus one day and he referred to me with the N-word. He said, and I was shocked. I was shocked because, I mean, I knew that some of these kids thought this or what have you, but to actually say it to my face. And it actually was the brother of a girl that I was really good friends with. And so that was also hurtful because I thought that this was a family that had been accepting of me. So for him to say it just made it even that much worse. And, you know, looking back on it, I know that he said it trying to get points with his friends, that it really had very little to do with me, but I didn't care at the time. And so I was embarrassed and angry and just it was smoldering all the way to school. And by the time we got to school, you know, everybody got off the school bus and he went over to the tree that he and his boys hung at, you know, every day before we had to go into school. And something just came over to me and I just went over and I was, you know, I'm not tall now. I wasn't tall then. It's not like I shrunk. And I just went and grabbed him by the neck and just punched him dead in his face, you know? And I was like, you know, who's your now?
Just like in Angela's story, No one at Lisa's school disciplined the boy, but they did call her in.
No one dealt with what he said. I was the one hauled off to the principal's office. And, you know, they called my parents. And of course, my parents came in and, you know, my parents said what happened. No one else had asked me, why did you do this? No one identified that this was so out of character for me. And then when I told them why I did it, my parents were like, well, what were you expecting for her to do? Like, what? Like, yes, this is, she was angry. This is what she did. She was embarrassed on the bus. You know, she was called out of her name, this, that, and the other. And, you know, I don't really think that the boy had, like you said, a nice little quiet talking to. I don't think he was ever addressed.
I guess the lesson here is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Lisa and I were put on pedestals and gave birth to children who are put on pedestals and could become the grandmothers of children who are put on pedestals. Ultimately, the experience is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you become the de facto representative for an entire race of people and are held up to impossibly high standards. On the other hand, though, you are given a platform that can be used to advocate for others like you. For Angela, that has meant using her voice, her art, her pedestal to tell stories that matter to her.
I want to be a theater artist for social change in whatever capacity. I love performing. I love creating work. I love producing work. I think it's so important right now, at least for me, as an African-American queer person, to have the voice needed to like talk about these kinds of issues, especially in the social climate that we have right now in America. And I think it's a part of my job, especially as an artist, as a young artist, to you know, express myself in any way possible.
And that's our show. Thanks to Philly Young Playwrights Executive Director Lisa Nelson Haynes, Nola Laddie, and Olivia Haynes for a great conversation. Pedestals was performed by Nia Benjamin under the direction of Steve Gravel. And big thanks to Southwest Philly's own Angela Bay for creating this powerful monologue. Great work, Angela. See you next time. Mouthful is produced by Lisa Nelson Haynes and Mitchell Bloom of Philadelphia Young Playwrights. PYP is an arts education nonprofit that taps the potential of young people and inspires learning through playwriting. And by me. I'm an NYU journalism professor, and I also edit Mouthful, and I'm Yvonne Laddie. Production support was provided by Anne Hoffman. Original music for Mouthful was created by Ill Dutes. To join the Ill movement, head over to illdutes.com. That's illdoots.com. For episode extras and more information, visit mouthfulpodcastphilly.com. Got that? MouthfulPodcastPhilly.com. And be sure to check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Mouthful Philly. Subscribe and review us now on iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud to be sure you'll never, ever, 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 ever miss a conversation. Mouthful is a production of Philadelphia Young Playwrights.